Imagine hiring like a heavily armed, top-tier security guard to protect your home. You hand them the master keys, you give them full access to the security cameras, and you provide the alarm codes.
Right, you're trusting them completely.
Exactly. Now imagine watching a burglar casually walk up to that guard, hand him a forged set of instructions, and then watch as your own security guard just turns around and unlocks the front door for the intruder.
I mean, that is just the ultimate inversion of the threat model.
Yeah.
When the perimeter defense mechanism that is designed to keep your network secure becomes the primary vehicle for compromise, well, the entire architecture of trust just collapses.
Yeah, which brings us to our mission for you today. Welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah.
We are unpacking three critical cybersecurity sources that they perfectly map out how this unseen threat landscape operates in the real world.
We've got a lot of ground to cover.
We really do. We are looking at actively exploited zero days hiding inside Microsoft Defender. Then we're tracking the dramatic disruption of a record-breaking 31 terabit per second botnet built entirely out of neglected household gadgets.
And finally, we will explore a structural flaw that has been hiding in plain sight within the Linux kernel for 9 long years.
9 years. It's
Yeah.
wild. Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start with the guard handing over the keys.
Right.
Microsoft just disclosed two actively exploited flaws in Defender, which is, their flagship anti-malware platform.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Exactly. The most severe is a privilege escalation flaw, and the specific mechanism is listed as improper link following. So instead of reading off the technical severity scores, let's look at the mechanics. How does an attacker actually weaponize a scanning engine?
Well, you have to consider the permissions required for an antivirus engine to even do its job. Defender operates with system-level privileges.
Which is like the highest level of access on a Windows machine.
Right, the absolute highest. Because it needs to aggressively dig through every single directory, every registry key, and system file to hunt for malicious code.
Okay.
So, link following refers to how the operating system processes symbolic links, which are essentially, advanced shortcuts pointing from one file location to another.
Right, so an attacker who already has low-level unprivileged access to the machine, they just create a malicious detour sign.
Pretty much. They drop a payload and create a symbolic link pointing to a restricted system file that they normally wouldn't have permission to touch at all.
Oh, wow. And then they just wait.
Exactly. They just wait for Defender to do its routine sweep. When the scanning engine encounters that shortcut, the improper handling means Defender doesn't realize it's being redirected.
It just blindly follows the
And
lint.
it blindly follows it, carrying its massive system-level privileges with it, and inadvertently executes an action or modifies a file directly on the attacker's behalf.
So the attacker is essentially hitching a ride on Defender's VIP access badge
Yeah.
just to elevate their own privileges.
That is exactly what's happening.
The ultimate irony here, though, according to the threat intelligence reports, is that systems where Defender is actively disabled are actually immune to this specific vulnerability.
I know, it's crazy.
Right. The cure is the disease in this isolated edge case. But the sheer number of researchers who found this simultaneously is what really stands out in the source material.
Yeah, what's fascinating here is that you have five different independent security researchers and teams credited with discovering this exact same improper link following flaw
All at the same time.
all at once. And when multiple independent research teams uncover the same zero-day vulnerability at the same time, it usually indicates blood in the water.
Meaning what exactly?
It means the vulnerability was likely being traded in underground forums, or, the anomalous behavior it creates became noisy enough that multiple threat hunting teams just tripped over it simultaneously in the wild.
And we know threat actors are stringing it together right now. Security firms, like Huntress, they reported seeing this Defender flaw chained alongside another vulnerability called Bluehammer.
Right.
Plus, we were seeing overlap with two other zero days dubbed Red Sun and Undefend. Those were deployed by an advanced threat group known as Chaotic Eclipse. So they are actively hunting for these security stack bypasses.
Yeah, and this is why the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, immediately threw this into their known exploited vulnerabilities catalog.
Most definitely.
They mandated that all federal civilian executive branch agencies must patch the Defender platform by June 3rd. But this patching frenzy, it isn't just limited to new cutting-edge flaws.
Right, I saw that. CISA also just added vulnerabilities from 2008, 2009, and 2010 to that exact same mandated list.
Yeah.
That stuck out to me. Why are we dragging 15-year-old vulnerabilities into an active exploitation catalog? We were talking about like an old heap-based buffer overflow in Adobe Reader from 2009.
Yeah.
Are threat actors really digging that far back into the archives?
They absolutely are because enterprise networks are sprawling and messy.
Yeah.
I mean, a buffer overflow is essentially pouring 10 gallons of water into a 5-gallon bucket, right? The spillover overwrites adjacent memory where executable code might live.
Okay, that makes sense.
And if a large organization has a legacy server just sitting forgotten in a utility closet, running outdated software that hasn't been patched since the Obama administration, well, attackers will find it.
Don't care how old the door is.
Exactly.
They do not care how old the door is as long as the lock is broken.
So we have billion-dollar enterprise security stacks failing at the top level and ancient legacy servers failing at the bottom. But attackers aren't just going after the digital vault anymore.
Not at all. They are weaponizing the absolute bottom of the consumer tech food chain to do their dirty work. Which brings us to the smart devices sitting in your living room and the arrest of a 23-year-old Canadian operating under the alias Dort.
Jacob Butler from Ottawa. The U.S. Department of Justice charged him with operating a massive distributed denial of service botnet called KimWolf.
Now, this is where I have to look at the architecture of the targets. KimWolf was enslaving web cameras and digital photo frames.
Yep.
And my immediate reaction is just, wait, digital photo frames?
Yeah.
Why would an elite hacker go out of their way to enslave a digital photo frame or web camera? There's no financial data on there.
Right, none.
It just sits there, cycling through pictures of family vacations.
It requires a total shift in how you view the hardware. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the cybercriminal has zero interest in the local data on that device.
Oh, I see.
They are interested in the fact that the photo frame is directly connected to the internet. It's usually pulling high-resolution images from a cloud server, meaning it has a high bandwidth pipe.
Ah, the connection.
Yes. Furthermore, these devices have incredibly constrained hardware. They cannot run endpoint protection. Their firmware is often hard-coded with default administrative passwords. And, you know, they sit outside the traditional IT update cycle.
They are essentially unmonitored, high-speed internet nodes.
Exactly. They are the perfect raw material for the cybercrime as a service model.
Wow.
Butler wasn't necessarily launching attacks himself. He allegedly built the infrastructure to enslave these devices and then rented out that invisible army to other threat actors through dark web portals.
The scale achieved by this botnet family is terrifying. Our sources note that KimWolf is a variant of a botnet called AsureU.
Right.
Prior to this takedown, botnets in this specific family were attributed to some of the most massive DDoS attacks in recorded history, peaking at 31.4 terabits per second of junk traffic.
To process 31.4 terabits per second, you are not just congesting a target website's bandwidth.
No.
You are fundamentally exhausting the packet processing capabilities of the massive enterprise-grade routers sitting in the upstream data centers. It creates a localized internet blackout.
And the targets weren't just rival gaming servers or small businesses.
Not at all.
The DOJ specifically noted that this botnet targeted Department of Defense Information Network IP addresses.
Which is wild.
You have a scenario where a cheap digital photo frame sitting on a grandmother's mantelpiece is inadvertently conscripted into a massive infrastructure crippling attack against the Pentagon.
Yeah.
But catching the operators of these botnets is notoriously difficult because they hide behind layers of proxies. So how did law enforcement actually track down a 23-year-old in Ottawa?
Well, operational security is incredibly difficult to maintain over long periods. It usually comes down to digital breadcrumbs.
Just slipping up.
Exactly. According to the unsealed court documents, investigators linked Butler to the KimWolf administration panel through overlapping IP addresses, reused online account information, and chat logs. Specifically, they found records posted on Discord by an account named Reza.2, which tied directly back to his real-world identity.
You know, independent security journalist Brian Krebs actually published an investigation exposing Butler's connection to KimWolf back in February.
He did, yeah.
Butler tried to claim he had been hacked. He said he hadn't used the Dort persona since 2021 and was just being impersonated. But that alibi clearly fell apart under the weight of a massive multinational law enforcement operation.
Yeah, the coordinated sweep 2 months ago involved agencies from the US, Canada, and Germany. They didn't just arrest individuals, they dismantled the entire infrastructure.
A total takedown.
Right. They disrupted the command and control servers for Kimwolf, AsherU, JaxxGid, and Mossad. They seized 45 different DDoS for hire platforms in a single operation.
It is a massive win, considering Kimwolf alone had issued over 25,000 attack commands. Butler is now facing 10 years in prison for aiding and abetting computer intrusion.
Which is a serious sentence.
Very serious. But it still leaves us with millions of vulnerable IoT devices sitting on shelves worldwide, just waiting for the next botnet operator to claim them.
Because the consumer market incentivizes cheap hardware and fast deployment over long-term security. Until there is a fundamental shift in how IoT devices handle forced firmware updates and credential management, these endpoints will remain the foot soldiers of the cyber threat landscape.
Yeah, so we have looked at the security software actively guarding our networks and the cheap endpoints sitting in our homes. What happens when the foundational architecture holding up massive swaths of the internet itself has been compromised and nobody noticed for almost a decade?
This is the big one.
Let's talk about the Linux kernel and a newly disclosed vulnerability tracked as CVE-2026-46333.
This is perhaps the most insidious threat in the sources today. I mean, the Linux kernel is the core referee between a computer's physical hardware and its software processes.
Right.
It runs everything from Android smartphones to the servers hosting the global financial system.
And this flaw has been lurking, completely undetected, since November 2016.
Yeah.
This is like finding out the concrete foundation of your home has had a hollow cavity since the day it was poured, and you are only just now finding out.
That is a perfect analogy.
So Saeed Abbasi from the threat research unit at Qualys found this improper privilege management bug rooted in a function called crasebeta domain access. For a listener managing a fleet of Linux servers, how does this process trace mechanism actually get abused?
Okay, so iTrace is a legitimate, widely used diagnostic tool in Linux. Developers use it to observe and control the execution of another process for debugging.
It's meant to be there.
Exactly. Think of it like a one-way mirror in an interrogation room. The developer's on the outside, observing the program running on the inside.
Okay.
The may access function is the kernel acting as the security guard at the door to that room, checking to ensure the person trying to look through the mirror actually has the authorization to observe that specific process.
So the bug means the kernel's authorization check is fundamentally broken.
The bug essentially shatters the one-way mirror. An unprivileged basic user account on the system can exploit this primitive to bypass the check entirely.
Oh, wow.
They don't just get to observe the process, they can reach right through the broken glass, grab a highly privileged process by the collar, and essentially steal its VIP access badge.
Which turns any local shell into a direct path to root access.
Yes.
The researchers codenamed one of the exploit paths Sishki-Simpon, because once you shatter that mirror, you can disclose incredibly sensitive files. You can read slash, et cetera, slash shadow, which holds the encrypted passwords for the entire system, and you can extract the host's private SSH keys.
The reach is massive. It works across default installations of enterprise-grade Linux distributions, including Debian, Fedora, and Ubuntu.
It's everywhere.
Everywhere. Attackers can execute arbitrary commands as root through multiple existing system components, things like chage, swish key sign, speaksec, and the account's daemon.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? The practical impact is that a proof of concept exploit is out in the wild. You need to apply the kernel updates immediately.
Right away.
But, you know, what if you are running a critical production environment and you simply cannot reboot a server to apply a kernel patch today?
There is a temporary mitigation. You can raise a system setting called kernel.yama.ttrace_scope to a value of 2.
Okay, and what does that do?
Changing that integer restricts the ICTrace functionality so it can only be used on child processes. That effectively cuts off the lateral attack vector this bug relies on.
That buys you some time.
It does. However, patching or applying that workaround only stops future attacks. The historical cleanup is a completely different nightmare.
Yeah, Qualys released a stark warning about the exposure window. Since this bug existed for 9 years, if your systems have allowed untrusted local users at any point during that time, you have to assume a compromise occurred.
You must treat your SSH host keys and locally cached credentials as fully disclosed.
Wait, really? I have to push back on the logistics of that. Rotating host keys across an entire enterprise fleet is a massive, highly disruptive undertaking.
It is incredibly painful, yes.
It breaks automated scripts, it disrupts continuous integration pipelines, and it requires immense coordination. Are we really saying organizations need to burn down their existing credential infrastructure based on the mere possibility that someone silently exploited this local bug in, say, 2019?
I mean, it is an agonizing risk assessment for system administrators, but you have no forensic way of knowing if an advanced persistent threat quietly escalated privileges 5 years ago and just walked away with your keys.
That is terrifying.
Given the severity of root access, failing to rotate those keys means you are leaving a permanent backdoor wide open. It is a massive administrative headache, but the alternative is assuming your network perimeter is secure while the attacker already possesses the master keys.
And it seems like Linux is just taking heavy fire from all sides right now. The source material notes this comes directly on the heels of other severe kernel flaws we've seen recently, like copy fail and dirty frag.
Yeah, it's been a rough stretch.
There is also a brief detail in the briefing about a completely separate local privilege escalation proof of concept targeting Arch Linux called PinTheft.
Right. PinTheft is a fascinating look at how complex memory management has become. It was discovered by researchers from Zelic and the V12 security team.
Okay.
It exploits an RDS zero copy double free vulnerability that can actually overwrite the page cache.
Let's break that sequence down a bit for the technical listeners.
Right.
When we talk about zero copy in the reliable datagram sockets module, we're talking about speed.
Pure speed, exactly.
Normally, the CPU has to actively copy data from the network interface card into the application's memory space. Zero copy bypasses the CPU entirely. It writes the data directly, which saves a massive amount of processing overhead for high-speed network traffic.
Right. And the vulnerability lives in the error handling of that high-speed transfer. If an error occurs while sending data, the system is supposed to drop the memory pages it was using and return them to the available pool.
Makes sense.
But the bug causes the system to drop those memory pages a second time during the cleanup phase.
A double free memory error.
Exactly.
When you free the same block of memory twice, you corrupt the operating system's internal ledger. The system thinks that memory space is completely empty and available for a new, highly privileged application to use.
Yep.
But the attacker still holds a reference pointer to that exact same space.
And by using a feature called IRing, which handles incredibly fast input-output operations, the attacker leverages that lingering pointer to maliciously overwrite the system's page cache.
Wow.
Once again, it allows an unprivileged user to overwrite critical system data and gain full root privileges.
Which perfectly synthesizes the core theme of everything we've looked at today. Trust in the digital landscape is a remarkably fragile concept.
It really is. We rely on assumed layers of defense. We trust that Microsoft Defender will actively guard the endpoint, yet we watch attackers weaponize its privilege scanning engine.
Right.
We trust the mundane IoT devices in our living rooms, yet the Kim Wolf botnet proves that those forgotten appliances can be conscripted into armies capable of crippling internet infrastructure.
Yeah.
And we trust the Open Source Linux Foundation vetted by thousands of developers, only to find a shattered mirror hiding in the code for 9 years.
Which leaves you, the listener, with a final, slightly provocative thought to take away.
Yeah.
We place immense faith in the idea that many eyes make all bugs shallow in open source code.
We really do.
And we blindly assume that automated updates to our security stacks will save us.
Yeah.
But if a critical flaw can hide in the core architecture of the internet for 9 years,
yeah.
And if a digital picture frame can be weaponized to attack the Pentagon, at what point do we need to fundamentally rethink what a secure device actually is? Something for you to mull over today.
It is the defining challenge for the next era of cybersecurity. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the unseen threat landscape.
Stay curious, keep challenging your assumptions, and we will see you on the next deep dive.